of all the great sages assembled in that meeting that Shiva, being one of the demigods, had ruined the good reputation of all the demigods by his unmannerly behavior. The words used against Lord Shiva by Dasya can also be understood in different ways, in a good sense. For example, he stated that Shiva is Yaso Gana, which means one who spoils name and fame. So this can also be interpreted to mean that he was so famous that his fame killed all other fame. Again, Dasya used the word nirapatrapa, which also can be used in two senses. One sense is one who is stunned, and the other sense is one who is maintainer of persons who have no other shelter. Generally, Lord Shiva is known as the Lord of the Bhutas, or a lower grade of living creatures. They take shelter of Lord Shiva because he is very kind to everyone, and he is very quickly satisfied. Therefore, he is called Ashutosh. To such men who cannot approach other demigods or Vishnu, Lord Shiva gives shelter. Therefore, the word nirapatrapa can be used in that sense. So just before I start the verse, some devotees are leaving today, some tomorrow, but I'm sure the devotees in Vrindavan want to invite many of you who would like to stay. This coming weekend, there will be some festive activities here, and so you can find out more about that later. But if you'd like to stay on, if you want to go for a few days and come back, I'm sure this will be highly appreciated. Also, simultaneously, devotees in Gitanagri are having next weekend. They're having several programs during this memorial period, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, a few hours away from here. So they also invite you to participate. There'll be several workshops and many different samskaras. As you saw recently in this Hare Krishna world, there was a mention about a samskara we had, the Vivaha samskara. It was always somehow one of the more popular ones. That it is a significant way, as there's so many presidents here, to bind our communities together better. Because we're not interested in this karma conduct activities, but especially according to Gopal Bhakta Goswami, there are particular ways to execute the samskaras in the Vaishnav line. Real things bind us together as we go on in our in the mission, and these are particular ways to remind us what is to be done, how it is to be done, and for each individual to be accountable to himself, to Guru, to Sadhu, etc. So you saw, and we do the samskaras, they're quite flavor. You saw the one in Hawaii, we had the bride and groom riding on a white horse. We decorated the horse very nicely. We had a written dancer heading the procession, big Harinam party. And so we had big Mahaharinam throughout the town. The idea was to involve the people in the Yuga Dharma, while at the same time to honor the devotees as well as to honor their families that had come. And then, of course, the horse was dancing in steps to the sound of the tumultuous drums, etc. So maybe he'll become a bhakta in his next life. So sometimes at Gitanagri we have our processions. We're more into simple life, simple living, high thinking, hopefully self-sufficiency. So we have things on the ox cart, and sometimes we steal the buggy wagon, and so we have things around the property honoring Mother Bhumi and such. So we invite you to come, stay here, please, or do both, stay here part-time and come, and be sure to take advantage of all the ratiyatras that are happening all around, because this way we bond together as we remind ourselves the spiritual warfare, the mission that we have under Lord Chaitanya. I also want to honor my family, some of my brothers, my sisters, you kids are here. So this discussion is about an interesting point. Here we see a couple of things. We see some dispute between son and between son-in-law and father-in-law. We see a lot of hurt and pain. And we also see people in high places engage in conflict. There's a tremendous amount of cursing and counter-cursing that goes on as we read the chapter. And so sometimes it's rather confusing. Why do powerful people or people in such exalted positions often engage in this kind of dynamic? And we also see the tremendous pain that comes from certain types of relationships. It's like I'll ask you, what type of relationship can hurt you more than any other type? Please, someone can answer. What type of relationship can hurt you or hurt you more than any other type? Yes. Divorce? Yes. More? Family? Betrayal? We've all felt the pain. What kind of thing can hurt you the most? The best friend? One or two more? Intimate relationship? Separation. So it's all similar. Those that can hurt you the most, those who are most dear to you, those who you depend on the most, those who you give the greatest attention, love, and service to, can hurt you the most. Nobody can hurt you more than those who you love the most. Those who you love the most can give you the greatest happiness, protection, satisfaction, etc. As Paul Pott explains, Salas Aquino, Bobbin 2, that's so important is for people to be happy, satisfied, not based on Kapala Sukha, sense gratification, but based on knowing the goal is accessible, ability trying to follow that goal, and having models that show what is to be done and how it is to be done. Just as we see such relationships as like we are here and we're many of us in charge of people. We can help people so much and do so much for them, but also we can hurt them. As people give their attention, their love, their surrender, the God people can give more care than anyone. But when the God people do not carry out the activity based on Sadhu Shastra Guru Vaika, Kire Kiryaika, then we see that not only can they give such pain, but they can cause people to lose faith in the Godhead. So we should take on some of these things back with us, some of us who are leaving today and tomorrow, of how important our positions are, whether we are head of the jewelry department, head of the kitchen, whether we're temple president, commander, regional secretary, GBC guru, that we're in position, we can give the greatest amount of love, service, protection, guidance, and at the same time we're in positions where we can bring pain beyond any pain that one can practically imagine in the material body. Like some of the discussions we're having about child abuse, parenting, so many things. What can destroy us here so much? And those who are there to protect are the ones who give the greatest attack, the greatest assault. Or those who are there supposedly to provide are the ones who do that the less. But not only do not provide, but arrange or allow abuse, exploitation, etc. So especially in our system, we have, for instance, guru-disciple relationship. But it's extremely powerful. To me, it's extremely invigorating and supportive if it is done according to the parampara system. Evam parampara prapam imam adi sanhobu. But when not, then it can become tyranny. It can become the worst kind of abuse because it can affect every aspect of one's existence. So here we've seen how Sati was very, very hurt. One, because of the interplay between her husband and her father, those who are in very powerful positions, those who are to provide powerful examples of cooperation or unity with diversity for the higher good of the family. And so this was so devastating that we find how she took the most extreme action. At the same time, we see that these persons were very, very powerful in their own right. Sometimes you're noticing in today's society that where things are becoming cultureless, people are becoming very shameless. But only 5, 10 years ago, many things that are happening right now, people did not do. Or if they did, they would do them in private, in secrecy, surreptitiously. But now, not only has the culture of sin, the culture of incarceration, devastation, the culture of college becoming more dominant, becoming so strong, that now people are engaged in sinful life, they're imposing those sinful lifestyles on others, and making others who are trying to live a life of righteousness, a life of piety, a life of purity, what if they have a life of transcendental things? They impose and make them feel embarrassed. So it's very serious when Maya becomes that strong, that it is not just the sin, but it becomes collective and it becomes imposed as like a subculture. And this is what we are having to deal with as we're trying to preach in our various temples and various parts of the world. There's also a major effort sometimes to minimize that which is most beneficial for Atmavidya, for self-realization. Just as we see how Dakya is sort of dehumanizing Jiva to justify what he has done. He talks about Jiva as being filthy, dealing with the Buddhas, the ghosts, etc. How Jiva has eyes like a monkey. So he finds ways to put demise Jiva in Jiva's position so that it allows his agenda, it allows his activities to be accepted. We see this constantly throughout, you know, throughout history. We see how there was a time when women were thought of here, right here, in this part of the Western world, as having no soul. So we see there was theology that was representing that women have no soul. And this was institutionalized in various ways. So therefore, it could allow all kinds of abuse and misuse. There were times when it was considered that the Native American Indians, that they were just savages. And so therefore, it allowed massive genocide. It allowed putting smallpox into the community, killing off hundreds of thousands of people. Because they're not really quite human. There was a time when African Americans were considered two-thirds. They were considered like cattle or like animals. And so therefore, it was no question of them voting. So there are sometimes attempts to minimize that what spiritualists do and to make it seem like something completely odd-fashioned so that certain agendas can be propagated. People often in high places of high influence can put out such kind of propaganda. So we're interested in truth. We're interested in the Sadhu Sangha, a Sadhu coming together to reveal truth and to live that truth and to share that truth and not to be caught in the illusion that are so obvious and so prominent in today's society. So we have to constantly clear the ambiguity. Then we see people often in high places who are not in the mood of service consciousness. Then they become very disturbed, as we see cases here where they become angry and demand sometimes honor. Obviously, one should appreciate culture. And with culture, there's always some classification, some stratification for a higher goal, create a complementary effect. Anarchy is very terrible. When there is a lack of some scholar, when there is lack of shastra, when there is lack of active sadhus who are carrying the internal bhakti, and a lack of recognizing what is that given by the great acharyas. So there is certain things that cause this, and our great Goswamis, they give us tremendous information, and we'll discuss some of those briefly as we sort of wrap up a little quick. Atyahara payasya pajabaniya magaha jana sangasya loya sakriya atyahara payasya pajabaniya magaha So there are certain kinds of things that are distinctly cause problems and cause people in high places to fall down, to deviate, etc. Certain gross, certain subtle, certain very subtle. There are certain things that causes people to become angry. We see that when one is attached to position, when one is attached to the facilities and the things that come along with that, rather than honoring those things to be able to give back more effectively. As we have facilities, whether it's manpower, whether it's money, whatever it is, as we have these things, building, etc., then as we honor those and give it back, use it more for service, then we see that it's some sign of perhaps detachment. But as we claim proprietorship and think that those things are ours, or think that we are the gift to the world, then it's easy in high positions to become angry because it's based on egocentricity. A sign of detachment is not necessarily what you have or what you don't have. It's not a matter of just getting rid of things, but it's a matter of the consciousness when some things are there and some things are not, a matter of how consistent the consciousness is. And so when some things are not there and we still maintain equilibrium, enthusiasm, when some things are there in abundance, we maintain equilibrium, enthusiasm without claiming it is ours one way or the other, then we're becoming transcendental because we're transcending the duality, the mode of material nature. We become conscious to go back to the spiritual world as we have become or becoming like that. We transcend transcendence. So for instance, when Lord Chaitanya is cleaning the Sandisha temple, he is giving us some of those things that cause people in powerful positions to become embarrassed. Or people in powerful positions to minimize what that really means to themselves and to others. And it then brings forth the onslaught of Kali, a much faster thing. So first of all, they're trying to clean the outside. They're cleaning the growth. They're cleaning the outside. In other words, they make arrangements, even clean that before it comes into the temple. They do sort of the prevention aspect as well as dealing with the actual scheme of things at hand. And they deal with the kunti nati. That is, he is cleaning with his own cloth, his own hand. They're throwing the buckets of water all around. They're doing this cleansing and setting the stage to maintain a sense of purity. And so they emphasize that some of this dirt that we have to look a little closer for is fault finding. That we must go searching because we're spiritual scientists. But we go searching to see how we can serve. We go searching to look for the higher bhakti and how we can identify with that, protect it. Also, chitta-satya, that is, we are so much captured by name and fame, high position. So sometimes people in powerful positions are in that position, those positions, because they are captivated by that particular power that's associated with them. And so therefore they use that power for their own agenda rather than using that to engage in facilitating in service. Nisidacharya, when the people in powerful positions do things that goes against the basic principles of justice, and find ways to justify it by all kinds of means, then they have used their position where people are listening, hearing from them, taking shelter, and they've used that to literally to sabotage that which is of a higher nature. We see that happening constantly throughout history, where history is really, in one sense, the fall of the dominical class, the fall of the sadhus. As the sadhus become weaker and weaker, then we move from sattva traita to upper kali. As we move closer to kali, we're looking at sadhus becoming weaker, particularly the dominical or the class of those who are supposed to be the caretakers of the siddhanta. It doesn't matter whether it's Krishna consciousness, whether it's any other religious path. The fall of history is literally the fall of people who are supposed to be the protectors of the tradition, who stop believing it, who are no longer able to follow or willing to follow it,
And therefore, they start acting and teaching and behaving in a way to justify their consciousness of where they begin to compensate or find ways to justify their deviation. And this is why Rupa Goswami explains how important it is, utsaha, for enthusiasm. Because once one loses their enthusiasm and their dedicatedness and service, then they lose their intelligence. One story about Bhakti Siddhanta. There was the Vice Chancellor Benares had come to see him, and he had heard how Bhakti Siddhanta was such a scholar. So he approached Bhakti Siddhanta and he told him, if he could answer some questions for him. He had some very philosophical questions on Siddhanta. Bhakti Siddhanta told him to go and to meet with the Pujari. He said, no, you don't understand. I have very philosophical questions. I need you to answer. He said, yes, go and meet. Ask the Pujari. So he went to Pujari, and he wanted to ask him a question. Pujari said, help us to clean the paraphernalia. We understand. Help us to clean the paraphernalia. So he thought, he had some doubt. He's this man of noble stock. But he started cleaning the paraphernalia with the Pujari. And then later, he left. Came before Bhakti Siddhanta. Bhakti Siddhanta asked him, did you have your question answered? And he said, yes. While he was cleaning the paraphernalia, he answered it. Bhakti Siddhanta explained that we cannot understand so many things just by scholarship alone. That must be there. But we must understand by dedicated, serious, unmotivated service. As we have that, then the Lord in the heart, who is always ready to provide, who's always there, comes forward more because we remove the things that's causing the covering. There are three basic things that's needed in the process. It's very significant. Shraddha, faith, faithful person who engages the mind and transcendental knowledge and subdues the senses. So faith must be there along with proper mind engagement while controlling the senses. If all three of those things are not there, there will be powerful positions, people in power positions who will become big embarrassments. If we have the faith, but if we don't engage the senses and particularly put the mind in transcendental knowledge, there'll be a problem. If we put the mind there, they fix the transcendental knowledge, we have some faith, we're not in sense control, there will be a problem. These three things are extremely imperative to be able to maintain stability as Kali becomes stronger. So then we have the Jiva Himsa. But this story is completely permeated with enviousness. Like the enemies of the mind, Kama, Krodha, Moha, Nara, Matsuya. This enviousness, Jiva Himsa. Or one was able to, Arjuna was able to hear because honestly, but he was not envious. We see, like in the case of Aranyakashipu being so envious of Bhakta Prahlad. We see how Duryodhana was so envious of Yudhisthira because of him being favored. And how Dakshya was so envious of Sita. And what this enviousness can do when there is power. Because the enviousness, the Jiva Himsa, is the total opposite of the offering of love, the offering of selflessness. This is we explain how one way of looking at the whole of history is the fall of the saintly class. Another way of looking at history, world history, is actually the minimizing or the fall of Vedic culture. Sometime back I was in South Africa, and it was during the Janmashtami, it was Ram Nomi. And so we were in a gathering in Durban with like thousands of people. And so I was speaking, somewhere in the middle of the program. And just before I came on, one or two acts before I came on, there was these young Indian girls, about 8, 9 years old. And so there was this, heavy, heavy rock music playing. And the first act, they were models. And then the next act, they were dancers. And as they were modeling, the audience was just whistling because it was disco music, and the young girls were gyrating just like Madonna. And it was totally amazing. And I was just thinking, what message they're sending to these young girls? And what message they're sending to the young boys? That these little girls dressed up, you know, like adults, and sent with clothes, gyrating in such a way. And so when I came to speak, I first started off by, it's amazing how Westerners are becoming more Eastern, and Easterners are becoming more Western. But I can't believe what I just saw. That these young kids, all dressed up, makeup, Western attire, playing the modern disco music, and grown men and women all over the place, thousands, who come for a spiritual celebration. And they're engaged in such ways. And older men, younger men listening at these little girls as they're moving about in a, you know, mood of sensuality. So it is very dangerous what is happening. That Prabhupada did something very significant, many things. But one of his significant offerings is that he brought the very best from the East. And he connected that with the best of the West. Not the mediocrity of the East and the mediocrity of the West. He explained how India is what? Is lame. The lame man. And the West is what? Blind. So think about that. So lame, so many capacities are there, but there's difficulty in knowing how to move and being able to move properly. Blind, so many things are there, but there's difficulty in perception. So he put those things together. And by doing that, he created a worldwide movement to bring about a new era for humankind if it's used. By putting these two things together, he arranged to give the highest message, to bring it down, to deny the principle, the essence of that, but to bring it to a level where it could be universally spread with less danger, because powerful things are also dangerous. Like our dating service, it is very powerful. It is not that it's all a part of every theology. It is very powerful, the Vaishnava line. But at the same time, if it is not properly done, it can bring all kind of inauspiciousness in so many ways. So he brought that. And so as we embrace that from the East, we must embrace the best that is there. We're not interested in the Yatta Mata Tata, but we're interested in the demigod worship. We're not interested in impersonalism. We're not interested in karma kanda, karma mimamsa. We're not interested in any type of ism. We're interested in Sanatana Dharma, eternal truth for humankind. That religiosity, that savaipum sa parodam, that is unmotivated, that is not conditioned by so many externals. We're not interested in just Western talk pot stuff. There's so many, many different themes and ideas and schools and so much different schemes of thought. Not interested in that stuff. But we're interested in the best of what can be used to be able to access a deep spiritual consciousness while we are struggling in the imprisonment in the Marcha Loka, while we're struggling in an environment that is designed to help people to forget about Krishna. I'm going to talk about that a little bit before I stop. Because it's a serious issue that we are confronted with today in our movement, and we'll be confronted with in the future. It has always been an issue on this planet. Another way of looking at the unfoldment of world history is that world history is nothing more Bhumiya Ponalabaya, Kama Buddha, Hanka, Dima Pasadiyasa. These separated energies is mainly an arrangement that people are here in these environments, and they are trying to assert the power of Krishna through the Indiasis, but particularly they are trying to find different alignments of power that can help them to do that. To see the whole of world history as just different individuals, institutions, grabbing races, groups, political parties, grabbing for alignments of power. Basically trying to minimize the ultimate source of power, the Paramesvara, this is the Yogeshwara. They're trying to minimize Adipurush. They're trying to minimize where the power really is. And so the part of the duty of devotees is to recapture the power, because you cannot do nothing without Shakti. Doesn't matter what it is. The demons, the Rakshasas, are very powerful, and they create a very unhealthy effect. The impersonalists who are very powerful create a very unhealthy effect. As power is there, it's according to how it's used. Sense is like austerity. Knowledge, it brings power. The question is, it is pious or impious? And hopefully it is transcendental. When we have power, then we have ammunition to be able to do something. But power must be there. Otherwise, it's synonym. Not going to move things without power. But the question is, what type of power? So there are different types of power that influences individuals, influences planets, influences universes. Because the universes are alignments of how much people have access unmotivated service and love. What makes the higher, medium, and the lower planet? The degree of love that is there individually and collectively determines the environment. The degree of how much there's enviousness and lust determines how far away that one is in the planetary evolution. And it has to do with the power. The residents of Vrindavan are extremely powerful. We often think that power means the ability to manipulate things. That's a fallen civilization when they have to rely on so many external things. The more powerful an individual or civilization is, the more there is internal power to manifest. The corporate victory tree in the spiritual kingdom, they don't have factories and so many technological things. This is Kali Yuga. But they have the ability to manifest based on desire. So as we have more and more emphasizing the love and devotion in ourselves and the community, we create a tremendous power that makes things happen. Otherwise, we've got to rely so much on external things happening or not happening or disappointing us, because all material things are temporary and will disappoint us, especially when we often need them the most. There are about 8 different types of power that fits our understanding of anomoya, pranamoya, kanamoya, vijanamoya. We see that individuals are evolving, civilizations are evolving. At the most gross level, people are just concerned with something to eat. At a higher level, how to protect that they're trying to eat or that they have captured or stole, or etc. And then there's a matter of some reflection, first at a lower level of thinking more, how to arrange for safety, how to arrange for more things for the future, and then begin to think on some philosophical things, and hopefully it leads into self-actualization, it leads to transcendence. The first power is there. And this is social, spiritual, is physical power. When an individual or a group of people or an organization is having to do things based on physical persuasion, that is the most gross level. That is very animalistic. And many, many things happen based on that. Second level, in the evolutional phase, is institutional power. Let me explain that. You have this in political parties and organizations. When the organization becomes the thing of itself and the essence is no longer there, the people are no longer there, their concerns are no longer there, it's just a matter of a leader in certain positions who have certain ideas that act as an external way and minimize the real growth and development of those who they're supposed to be the caretakers for. That's also like a violence. It's also like a physical power. But in one sense, it's more, because not just a physical assault, but it brings all kind of psychological devastation to the individual when they are whooped and beat by institutions. And we're not anarchists. Institutions are necessary for bringing people together, individuals together, to be able to work on their consciousness. Like we are an institution ourselves, with International Society for Krishna Consciousness. But in any situation where the institution becomes a thing of itself, as if it, in fact, is the essence, that is very dangerous, and how power can hurt and abuse and misuse and exploit people. The second level of power is emotional power. Now, this is happening more and more in today's time. You understand it. Emotional power is particularly that we see that affects people's passions and emotions. That it comes from entertainers. That it comes from sportsmen, where people are worshiping entertainers just like they are demigods. People literally fall out. They go to college of ecstasy when they go to some of these concerts. They have the pictures of the person on the wall. They dress like them, walk like them, talk like them. And you mention something about their kata, they drop everything. And they want to hear, they want to go to see that person. They stand in line for hours, sometimes the day before, to see that there's a tremendous amount of power in that. And that's why you find that some of these rock stars and people with all kinds of sinister agendas have infiltrated the entertainment field, as they know they can infect the minds of millions. Next, there is academic power. There is a tremendous amount of influence. You know, if you associate with academics, if you've been there, there's a tremendous amount of influence that goes with this kind of mental gymnastics. It's a culture of its own, and it has tremendous impact on society. And what those so-called acharyas represent is what is the best, or what is truth, or what is knowledge. And then there is intuitive power, and there is sacred power. I'm going a little fast. Intuitive power is a little bit more through inspiration in some way. Sacred power is what we normally find in religion, where people are trying to follow certain bona fide religious systems and bona fide teachers and bona fide prophets. But our case, we're particularly interested in what is understood as divine power. And divine power is when you realize, just as we see, the position of true sadhu is humble. He is karunika, the tiktiva, merciful and tolerant. Sadhu is completely in awe and in fear of misuse of power. Because they realize that all power ultimately belongs to Krishna. And the last thing they want to do is misuse and abuse that which belongs to their object of love, to their most beloved. And because how they are so much concerned about the well-being of others, they're so much concerned about the things that they do and the effect of what those things have on the environment. When you live for yourself, you don't care so much about what your effects have on others. But as you're becoming more and more the servant, you are specifically concerned about what you say, what you do, why you do it, and how you do it, based on how it brings to community. Because spiritual life is about eternal community, very dynamic relationship, based on Krishna as the nucleus, Krishna's true Bhagavan Swayam. So the sacred power is when one humbles themselves where they are being used like a puppet. And we call this cultivation in the highest level, where an energy of Krishna even enters into that individual, or where one begins to act in such a way non-different than how Krishna would want things to happen. So we want to be in powerful position to be able to humble ourselves to that power, where we can let the power work through us. That's another Goswami is saying, you know, how these things are happening through him, helping us to understand how Krishna, who is always there, can come through when we simply allow ourselves to move to the side a little bit more. So in conclusion, we want to look close at this story of Daksha and Shiva, of how in very high places that there can be discrepancies and various spiritual discrepancies, and what the effect of those discrepancies can be as we look at Sati and what she ultimately did. And we see that those who can hurt you the most are those who also can help you the most. We'll take it the other way. Those who can help you the most, if they're not careful, they can hurt you the most. So let us have a society where people are constantly being exhilaratingly helped by the care and the arrangements that we make in their lives to help them to enthusiastically feel happy about their alignment in Krishna consciousness. And not have where we have minimized Prabhupada's presentation of bringing the best of the East and mixing it with the best of the West. We don't want to allow more and more of the culture of sense gratification, where it becomes stronger and stronger, and not only are people living like that, but more and more imposing, because the saints have become so weak, the saints are not able to counteract the deviation. And so as the saintly class becomes weaker, then we see that the sinful life in personalism, materialism, and voidism becomes more dominant, and mixed devotion. So when Prabhupada gave us the best of the East, he didn't give us mixed devotion. He didn't give us kamakanda, kamimamsa. He didn't give us impersonalism. He didn't give us any type of ism, but he gave us Sanatana Dharma. Of the West, he didn't give us anything based on Western empiricism, materialism. But he gave us the knowledge of how to function in the material world to create an environment that enthuses us to understand the possibility of going back to Godhead, to remind us that Krishna is our well-wisher, our greatest protector, etc. And last, as Lord Caitanya was cleaning the Gandhika temple, we see how he cleaned these subtle things. Kunti Nati, false fund, Nisidacharya, Patistachana, Jivahimsa, and Karma, Puja. These things that can destroy the devotional creature, can allow certain dirt to remain, and it begins to spread again like a cancer. So we may stop the immediate external things, but then we have to look closer for those things that are more subtle, and we have to look outside, because if the door our things are dirty outside, eventually they're going to come in. We have to protect ourselves from the immediate outside of what we are trying to fortify. We protect ourselves inside by getting the gross and the subtle, and we do it in a static way together, as Lord Caitanya and his disciples did, and his followers did, and then the whole process became a festival of its own. And so instead of problems becoming more and more of a headache, if we deal with issues in the proper way, it becomes a festival. A chance to access service again. A chance to be together, to be able to maintain our loyalty to Srila Prabhupada. A chance to be able to engage in what seems to be almost impossible, but what becomes possible fully based on the mercy that particularly comes from divine potency, divine power, and see divine blessing. Hare Krishna. Maybe I'll take two questions. So I went a little longer than I expected, but I'll take two questions, please. Is Mr. Dita Swami here? Mr. Dita? Mark, am I okay for 9? 5 minutes? 9 o'clock? Okay. When genuine service is a thing, then there will be healthy balance. Krishna consciousness always involves strategy. In fact, you ask kind of the same question again and again. Prabhupada, for instance, you see how he quoted Chanaka Pandit, he quoted the Aquarian Gospel. He did so many amazing things in using, as we said, the best of the West and the best of the East. But he was sick. His mission was one thing, that he was a Krishna man. And I was just writing one of our leaders who had some trouble recently about the relationship with Prabhupada. And one of the things I emphasized is that Prabhupada did unusual things, but what was consistent was mercy. Wherever you have trouble trying to understand Prabhupada, if you bring the mercy factor, you'll immediately be able to see a sense of clarity. Mercy and compassion. Why he preached the way he did, why he institutionalized certain types of things, because of mercy. So if we do not have genuine mercy, we will always be confused in so many ways. Genuine mercy and compassion is not something that is just a matter of institutionalized, not something just based on the things you do, but it's based on the consciousness. So when that kind of consciousness is there, then we'll see constant depth of spirituality. We will not see parity. We will not see mechanical or mixed devotional service. We will not see ego or posturing. We will see mood of service. So now the mood has given us the understanding. And in service, it means what? The whole Bhagavad Gita is a battlefield. And a battlefield is a place where there is a certain strategy. We take the devotional service, we're declaring war on Maya. So in warfare, there's a need for different types of weapons. Every one of the Goswamis represented certain special qualities, had certain particular idiosyncrasies, but the nucleus was the same. Don't make us a cult. We are not a cult. A cult where we are clones. Prabhupada did not give us that. He gave us the highest expression of freedom based on the purity. And the purity is recognized as we go back to our great acharyas and we see what really constitutes purity. Any last question? Yes, it's the last question. Please, go in with this, go ahead.
Because the individual must not be regarded merely as a part of a collective group, it can only find definition and meaning through a centralized, depersonalized government. Rather, government exists only to aid and encourage the greater development of a person as a free individual. Perpetuation of cultural diversity is the best basis of true national loyalty. So my question is that sometimes we find within institutions a fear of creating or encouraging individual expression, because there may be a lack of control over the individual once they enter into that realm of their consciousness, of their life. At the same time, we have to be faithful to do this other justice. I'm wondering, is this statement correct, or is it something that needs to be reevaluated?
I'm trying to go deeper into it. You see, several quotes by Prabhupada is mentioning about not stifling the individuality of the devotee. But at the same time, our whole process is a process of surrender. And the process of surrender is not based on my idea, your idea, his idea, her idea. But it's based on what is the plan, idea, of Krishna. Now, we may have sometimes different discussions, and even sometimes like arguments, based on what is that plan. Because there are sometimes you can carry out an action based on Saturday Shastra Guru, and you can have one scheme of action that's supported by that. You can have Saturday Shastra Guru that can support something different. So when we have that, we can genuinely follow through on Saturday Shastra Guru, and then look at the results. And there are times when there's bona fide differences in ways how to do something for the service of Srila Prabhupada. But the question is, then let us see the results of that. So there is a problem when we hide behind institutions and don't work on ourselves. There's a problem when we think the institution is the thing of itself and forget that the institution is the people. There's also a problem when the people forget about the fact that an institution is designed to carry a certain type of mood. To the Prabhupada and all the great acharyas in the institution is a certain specific offering to Krishna. Certain specific offering to their spiritual master. So our duty is to be loyal to that flavor, to that offering, in that sense. So we are submitting ourselves to that shelter. It doesn't mean that we give up our independence. We are gaining our independence by being thinkers of how to carry out the desires of the spiritual master. So we agitate our minds like anything about how to carry out the spiritual master's desires. Prabhupada is a powerful leader. So therefore, he wanted to have a powerful brigade of devotees all around the world who could carry out the mission that he is carrying out for his spiritual master. It goes on up into the Lord, Chaitanya himself. So the idea is how we do that. And if we do it in a mood of service, it's not even about an individual pursuit and understanding of that, but again, it's about that happening and the influence it has on the spiritual family. You see? So many things can be resolved if we just bring the model of spiritual family. And the family differences, family many ideas, but if it's a healthy family, the consideration at the end of the day, what will please Sita and Mata? So in our case, we want to understand what will please Radha and Krishna. So that's not so easy. So we understand them, the divine couple, through their representatives. So at the end of the day, we want to constantly bring the soul back to Prabhupada's body. Yes, this movement is Prabhupada's body, but how much we want to activate that soul presence. And that soul is to the degree that we are doing things that would be the way that Prabhupada would want. Not that we do things that we want and we try to find something that fits what Prabhupada has said or done. There's a difference in the approach and a difference in the result. The different result when we do what we want and then we try to see how close we can bring that to what Prabhupada desires or has said. The difference when we start off on the point of what Prabhupada would want, Prabhupada desires, and then we move out from there. We have a whole different effect in that way. There's protection and there's advancement, exhilaration of consciousness and the project when that happens. Yes. This God found the child, his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Dhrita Prabhupada Ji, Vaishnava Thakur Ji.
Yeah.